Welcome to TILF Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about some quick fixes for your budget for 2025. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at the next generation of glufosinate. Ag History Minute, we'll have a GDU update. Cool Beans, that's Corny, we'll cover some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with TILF Agronomy. All right, it's feeling a little bit more like fall. I mean, we've had some cooler temperatures, but I don't know, we just keep kind of going up and down.
It's like a roller coaster.
They were showing one of the, it would have been like a mid-weekend in October, so it was basically last weekend, and there was east of the Mississippi on October 19th, 20th, like wasn't even a cloud in the whole sky, like the whole eastern part. And they just said, like, there's just this huge high pressure just sitting over the Midwest and the East Coast. And yeah, so it's been like harvest weather. You can't really ask for any better, I don't think.
Right.
Besides the risk of fires.
I mean, right. It's almost too dry. Yep. But yeah.
I went to a grower the other day, and he was had his air compressor, and the side of the combine was open, and he was just blowing away the dust and the debris. And he's like, I'm not taking a risk. I added two more fire extinguishers to my grain cart and combine just in case. So I think we lost a lot of leaves, though.
Yeah,
the last 3-4 days with the kind of breeziness
really
we
start
had.
Dropping, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and like stalk integrity.
Right.
It was before, I was like, you don't really want to, like, for sure not till Thanksgiving, but, you know, maybe early November. And now it's like, you better have it off by Halloween or you're going to have problems. Like,
right.
You're going to have problems.
Nothing good happens in a cornfield in November.
Yes.
I was just going to say that. We learned that yesterday.
Best quote ever from Jeff Rank.
Nothing good happens in a cornfield after November.
After Halloween. Right?
Yep.
In November.
Yeah. After Halloween.
Fake news, man. You got to quote it right here.
Yeah. Sorry. I still don't think we got it exact, but
I don't.
Do we want to continue on to the next part? Bag of suck.
Yeah.
It's what you get. But it's definitely been a rapid moving fall, that's for sure. No rain to keep us out of it. You can go anywhere.
I mean, besides like the soil being like too hard for tillage in certain scenarios.
Yeah, or soil sampling.
Right.
Any of that kind of stuff. But as far as moving across the landscape, I don't think I've heard of anybody getting stuck this fall. Whether it was silage, beans, corn.
No.
So,
I did just pull up the long range, of course. Wednesday to the 30th, 72. Thursday to the 31st, 59.
Yeah.
Okay. So 60 isn't terrible. There have been far colder.
Say rain, because that's where it's the worst.
AM showers. AM.
Because, last year there were ice storms on Halloween. So. Yeah.
But they couldn't hold off, like, give us that 13 degrees one more day. Oh, well.
Mother Nature is a fickle mistress. She giveth and she taketh away.
We can't complain, though. It's been beautiful.
Yeah, for how miserable the spring was, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's just been a weird, weird year. So who knows what we'll be able to look forward to next year. So you guys are ready to talk some quick fixes for your budget? Top six, which is, it's not 10, it's not 5.
I couldn't get to...
We got 6.
I could kind of get to 7 and like 8, but some of them weren't very good then, so I whittled it down to 6. Couldn't get it down to 5, and I couldn't... 10, I was like, they were reaching for for things to fix your budget. And the main thing is, obviously, we know that crop prices, you know, aren't great, and inputs are still high. And the best time to look at budget for 2025 is start thinking about it as harvest 24. you know, the year before and start making that plan. And I know that is hard because you want to kind of feel that accomplishment in harvest. But this year, that accomplishment's been hit or miss too. Yields are all over the board. So yeah, that can make you feel good or bad. And
no time for a victory lap.
Not really. And what is hard with this is a lot of times you don't even want to think about it. Most farmers know that it's going to be a tougher budgeting year, a tougher year to kind of plan for that. So sometimes you just sort of try to ignore it. And here's what I got, some maybe quick fixes to just get you thinking about what you can do, how to kind of improve that bottom line. So the biggest part we want to do is we want to like cut costs without cutting profits, without maybe cutting, you might lose a little yield, but you'll gain on profit. Or just really the goal of this is to really look at profitability, all in on profitability, so that you're making money on a year where margins are going to be really tight. So number six of the top six quick fix is VRT fertilizer. So right now is a good time to be thinking about VRT, getting those recs made, getting your soil samples taken, you know, either in 2.5, hopefully 2.5 acre grids if you're going to VRT. This would be a year where you do it on 5 acre grids too if it does, it's still going to save you money even if we aren't that perfect grid size. So I think VRT, now what tricky part of VRT, doesn't always save you money.
I was going to say, I would argue it's not necessarily saving money, but it's allocating your resources.
Correct.
You may spend the same amount on fertilizer, but you're not flat rating it. You're putting more where it needs more and less.
Way to say is let your VRT, the person making the recs, give them your budget, give them your budget of what you can spend on fertilizer for that year. If it's per acre, that's been working for guys. Hey, I'm going to spend $30 an acre on potash. I'm going to spend, you know, $30 an acre on phos. So a total of 50 or 60. Have that number in your budget. Work back from that. Now, as an agronomist, I don't love that. I don't want to work, you know, because what your checkbook says. However, this is the year you might have to do that. So then you can run those VRT recs and go, okay, I'm going to, you know, change my minimums, maximums to kind of be dialed in a little bit more. Some of that I am actually, you know, I really like having a minimum out there so you're at least putting out removal. But this year I'm pulling some of the minimums out. And then on the maximum side of a VRT rec, instead of, say, being 200, 300, or 400 pounds, maybe I'm dropping it down to 150 or especially like at 200. So basically what you're doing then is making a rec that, unfortunately, when I do a lot of those recs, usually a lot of the whole field is at your maximum. Sometimes, depending
on
what you've been doing.
If you've been dealing with manure, yeah.
Right. So it can vary. And what is hard with VRT recs is, yeah, if we're doing it on this budget-wise, you don't want to do a whole bunch and then keep having to change it to meet this budget, but at least have a guideline so that your agronomist knows about where they got to come in at on that number, that you don't say, like, well, yeah, you need this much fertilizer, and then you just don't do any. So I know I've said it on this podcast. I know it's on Farmers. Is my biggest part with any fertilizer when it comes to this is a lot of times the question that's posed from a farmer is a yes or no question. Is, well, can I just skip the fertilizer or not?
Yeah, and you know the idea of skipping fertilizer is usually not the best idea. You don't want to not do anything, because then you're just hoping that you've got some sort of residual fertility that may not exist. So skipping generally isn't the answer, but well, like you said, with VRT, it's you're reallocating your resources. You're probably you're picking your amount, your budget, spending it, and just kind of moving things around based on soil tests.
And I think the tight spot we're in right now, is corn prices, bean prices are low, but with kind of the climate of the world right now, a couple hurricanes we had with the phosphorus hitting the phosphorus plants, that's screwing that up. We've talked about that already. Whatever's going to come about, you know, what has happening kind of in the Middle East with Iran, Israel, Palestine, all that stuff going on.
The Russia-Ukraine thing still going on. Now you add Iran and Israel,
And then there's some Moroccan imports that got tariffs on that I was talking to a fertilizer dealer about, and that's kind of affecting things. So there's a lot of world pressure right now that isn't following usually markets, right? Like markets go down, fertilizer goes down. Well, now we got all this other pressure from other forces that are affecting fertilizer pricing that it really needs to go down to match our the input or the dollars we're bringing in, but it's not. And we can't just not fertilize because we know what kind of yields we get then. So we're kind of in this. So I do think, Todd, you're right on VRT is very important. You may not spend less, but you're going to put it where it needs it and maximize those areas that maybe weren't as high, or you're going to push those areas that are good. You're going to push them even more to push higher yields.
Yep, I would phrase it as I want you to highly leverage your soil test results. So this would be a fall to, you really got to look at which we do every year. You know, we have a crop plan that shows what it needs and all that, but this is a year even more to go, okay, where can I just put out removal? Where can I maybe add a little bit more or a little less?
And I know farmers complain about soil testing, right? Some costs. Some of them do, but in the grand scheme of things of what a soil, like testing a soil, the cost of doing a soil test on a field,
well, especially
it's not even close to what fertilizer could do.
No, and not right now is, you know, fertilizer's gone up and then come back down, and soil testing has gone up. I mean, we've seen inflationary pressures on it, but not near of what fertilizer.
Right.
Like that ratio currently is probably, I mean, not the same as what it was, say, a year or two ago when fertilizer prices were extremely high versus soil testing costs. But now it's not like fertilizer's come down and to a place where it doesn't make sense. I mean, it still makes a lot of sense to leverage those as much as you can. All right, number five is conventional corn varieties. So this kind of speaks to just hybrid selection in general, but I wanted to be very specific in that this could be a year, 2025, that you skip the traits in certain spots and yes, Matt's right, is first year corn. Right now per bag it's somewhere between 90 and $140 bucks a bag difference from like a double to a
conventional.
So, and that varies a lot. So, and the other part is you still need to pick a very good variety. So this would be only a fix to if like there's a version in the variety you're probably going to pick anyway in conventional, something like that. But it is a way to kind of save some money. Basically, that's what we're trying to do, find spots in your budget. So it's about, say, $50 bucks an acre savings. Now, some of this money will be redirected to your residual herbicide program.
But not $50 bucks an acre.
No, not all of that. And you may have to spray for corn borer. But when have we had to do that ever in the last? I mean, again, that's because there's a lot of BT corn out there. So it's not, you know, if everybody switched to conventional, that could change it. But as far as a quick fix for 2025, I think this could be.
It's kind of like the herd vaccine, right? Like
correct.
We've like the people that don't vaccinate really don't have a worry because the rest of the herd is vaccinated. It's kind of like this too, like corn borer. We haven't even thought about that. And when's the last time you've actually specifically scouted for it?
I've had even like lately scouts they just don't even see it, or it's a different bug from even the corn borer. Like, that's in 20 years ago, Bill, remember when we first started with Jeff, like we had to spray at times for him.
Yeah.
We like hardcore.
I remember between knee and chest high corn every week.
Right.
Pulling whirls.
Counting the number
and yep. Now,
so you are leaving yourself open to other Western meat cutworm, black cutworm. There's a few things that fields can get that there is traits to protect you on now. But
and a lot more options too this year.
Right. Yeah, there's more of the Vithera traits out there to protect it. So some of that you are leaving yourself, but there is still insecticides you can potentially use, and you shouldn't get up to that savings.
But even on first-year corn, like Matt said, even with Western Bean, you know, the moths wouldn't have been there the year prior. There's a little bit of
that. I mean, they could still fly in, but they're not, like you say, it's usually not as big of a deal on that. So I think this is a good spot that you can go back and not necessarily give up yield and save quite a bit of money. So, and there is some herbicide out there, you know, a lot of, depending on what your herbicide plan is, you're going to have to do, you know, basically a pre for sure and maybe follow up with an early post kind of residual to hold it. But like Bill and I have had good luck with Katagon herbicide.
I got a text. Sometimes you get these texts that you love or calls from growers. I got one this summer, like just kind of a guy I do kind of just recs for. I don't scout or anything. He's just like, I just want you to give me recs. And it was like late June, and he texted me. He's like, I don't know what the hell you sprayed on my corn, but it kicked ass.
And it was that conventional
corn. It was conventional corn, and it was like Katagon. I think we did dual or something for some residual harness or something like that. And it was just one of those like, okay, cool.
Right.
Like, this worked.
Right. Especially it is hard to find. Roundup is a quick fix to a lot of those things.
Right.
And we're seeing Roundup not work quite as good as it used to. So switching to having a product like this Katagon or something to try, and if it would use it on your farm. But yeah, I think this was a one to be considering right now as you're buying corn.
Don't go to Fleet Farm and buy corn.
No.
Still,
right. It still needs to be an excellent good variety. Thank you, man. That's a big part. And then one thing I would say is spend the money on the soybean traits, depending on what your weed problems are. That's maybe a part where, you know, you still want an E3 soybean or an Extend Flex to get the Liberty there, but something there that you can still spray those properly.
Especially after the tweet and the data we saw from Rodrigo about using Enlist and Liberty and how much better those two together are.
Right. Yep. So depending on your weed problems, but that one's one where I would almost say save the money on the corn side, redirect it to the bean side, because there too, to spray beans conventionally is way more expensive. To spray corn conventionally isn't as expensive,
yep.
I think is the way to say it. So the beans are, again, depending on your weed problem, if you got water hemp or giant ragweed or Roundup resistant weeds that are a problem in a broadleaf crop like soybeans, then that'd be something to look at there. All right, number four is less tillage or prescribed tillage. So mainly like a diesel savings or saving on labor, diesel, wear, tear on your machinery, all that.
Especially wear, tear this year.
Wear, tear is going to be big, yeah. So 2 weeks ago, we had a good episode that Bill had written about, you know, using penetrometer and kind of checking tillage. Listen back to that. No, one thing is since then, I'm like, been on a mission to use that penetrometer as much, and the ground's so hard that you can't really properly use. I mean, I've tried in the like cracks of the soil or over the row just to kind of get an idea, and it still helps. I'll be honest with you with that. It still did help. It still went, okay, yeah, I know the soil is just hard, but is it compacted or is it just hard? So that was what I was trying to, because every bean field that I was in, you know, soybeans were being harvested. It was like, man, we're going to have to till this. We're going to have to till this. We're going to have to till this. And then as I'm doing them, like these are all just, they're just hard throughout. They're not necessarily compacted.
Yep.
So some of them we did make the choice to do some sort of tillage on, and some we just said, you know what, we're going to wait till spring, see what happens then, and kind of decide then of how to address it. As corn's coming off, that'd be the same thing there is, you know, do you need, how much tillage do you need? You know, what do you do? I don't know the diesel savings, Bill, you had brought up in the penetrant of taking the butterfly wings off like your deep ripper.
Yeah.
That's got to save some diesel,
right.
I would assume.
Right.
I'm sure you're still pulling a big limb, you know. But things like that, too, to maybe reduce the, you know, amount of just properly aligning the amount of tillage to what you need as well. So, hopefully reducing recreational tillage.
And even with how dry it's been, the compaction in general shouldn't be there.
It's odd. I can't decide yet if the rain from the spring, though.
Sure. Fair.
Right. But we can't even assess that properly because it's the soil is so hard to really get to that. Because it feels like at every spot at 4 inches, there's a compacted layer everywhere. But is that something that you're going to... So that's hard, too. I don't want you to skimp if you need it. Again, I'm using the word sort of prescribed tillage here, that you're doing it where you need it and maybe saying, okay, a couple of these spots, I'm gonna not do it. Or even, I know this is more common in Illinois and Iowa, where you just deep rip parts of the field, not whole. And even areas in Wisconsin, it's common. I see it more in say, the rip in Wisconsin area, I'll see it. Or there's areas that do that. And that could be part of this, too, where, yeah, I'm only going to deep rip where I know I compacted with field lanes and traffic areas.
Or your, spray tracks that may have been a little bit wet this I say spring, but early summer.
Those are out there. Those spray tracks from early post or whatever are there. We're all seeing it when we're soil sampling.
Yep.
All right, number three is lime. Now, lime probably should be almost number one or up there, but like, it's the cheapest, easiest fix to a fertility plan is having proper pH. I think we look at this so much, and in general, we in our sort of area, we do not have to lime all that much.
It's not really something that we have a lot of problems with here. There's areas, like if you're sandier, you're probably dealing with it more. But
so that's why it is number three and not... It's because depending on the farm, this could be number one on your list.
Like
right now... Go find somewhere to buy lime. I just had a grower who has a few pH problems, and basically with him, what we decided to, we pulled out the. He doesn't have a pH problem across the whole field. He's got points with pH problems. So, say on the 400 acres he runs, there was only like 60 acres that needed pH addressing, and they were sandier spots, but. He's gonna go get somebody to spread just those areas. It's almost like a VRT lime in that case. But just pH is still really reasonably priced compared to fertilizers. And it's really what it does is makes fertilizer more available. So having that pH between say a 6.2 and a 6.8 would be ideal. Now, like we talked in our area, we have kind of the opposite problem of we have some fields that are too high of pH, over 7.5 to 8. And those areas, you know, it's nice to sort of pull down and get your pH in line, but that's going to be more pricey with sulfur this year. So some of that stuff will be a little trickier, but lime would be the kind of a quick, easy fix.
Yeah. Nothing else works, right?
Right.
Right. We have our other fertility programs aren't going to work if we don't have the pH in line.
The other cool part about liming is it was at one of the fertility, the old Precision Ag fertility, that Precision Ag conference that they used to have. InfoAg. They probably still have it. But at InfoAg one year, you get these just really, really smart people on fertility and precision management. And he's explained lime being the, like we have a buffer pH when we take a lime and then we have a pH. So we know the buffering capacity to get that soil from, say, a 5.8 to a 6.6. That's all, we do it at the lab. Whereas with phosphorus and potassium, we don't know the buffering capacity. We use a book value buffering capacity to move it from, say, a 10 phosphorus to a 20. So it's not an exact science by any means of moving those nutrient values. And in pH, it's an extreme exact science. So that's really neat that way that we have that tool that when you go to have that lime rec, it's actually quite accurate to, I mean, you know the quality of lime you're getting. It's, say, 60, 69, 80, 89. You can match it to the buffering capacity.
And we're fortunate that we have access to lime.
Correct.
It's fairly easy in this area.
Compared to other places. Here we don't need it. So true. Good point. So yes, that's a good point.
Because there's Pell Lime as an option too, but that's kind of a different product that doesn't quite work exactly the same as calcitic lime. So
All right, number two is cost of production budgets. So mainly here is just getting things on paper now, getting that budget on paper now. I know this year is going to be, you don't even want to do it this year because you just know that it's going to suck. So it's going to be one of those years you're just going to be like, I know it's going to suck. I just don't want to think about it for 2025 yet or whatever. But I think the sooner you get it on paper, the sooner you can come to grips with it. I actually think it'll be a sort of that good drag in the sleigh right away that you can feel better about it. So in a budget doesn't necessarily mean you have to spend less money. It's just planning for every dollar and what you have on input. So we see all these clips now of, and I used to listen to him, but Dave Ramsey, the yep. sort of personal budget guru guy. But he says, his quote is, a budget tells your money where to go. So basically all you really need to write down is where I want my money to go. And then what I always hate about crop budgets and enterprise budgets is there's big assumptions in yield goal and selling price. So that's what I hate about them is think of last year, what you're writing for yield goal and then what you actually got this year is...
Well, even price, right?
Right, like, and price.
We got all these bushels sitting in bins yet.
Right.
And guys would have been better off selling a year ago now. Like, right. Let's not put it in the bin. Let's get it off the co-op or get it off to the mill and sell it because you got the best price then. And we were like, oh, we'll get it. We'll hold it. We'll keep it and we'll get a better price. Well, you're assuming...
The other part with price, it's unfortunate, is as long as you're locking in a profit, which this year you may not be, but like last year, previous years, when you're shooting for some price just to make you feel good, well, as long as you sold it for a profit, it's okay. Like you sold, you made money. Like, right. That's good.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, even last year, like herbicide, your budget probably got blown up a little bit because your pre's didn't activate and all of a sudden you had to make another pass. And so there's those aspects that you can't plan for, but it's still better to have that budget and know, okay, I should try to meet it, but know that there's unknowns that are going to pop up too.
Diseases, things like that. Yeah. I wasn't planning on a fungicide, and now I am because this popped up or that popped up.
The one thing I've noticed in budgets is, you got fixed cost and then you got variable ones. And, fixed ones aren't going to surprise you. They're fixed. Right. And they're actually quite a big part of your, machinery. And
your fertilizer can technically be a fixed one too, right?
So anyway, what I'm getting at is like we worry about those kind of things, but there's still an other miscellaneous category in most people's budgets that's probably $20 to $40 an acre. And I would say most years that covers something stupid that happens. So again, having that on paper... Most of the time, this isn't a year where it's going to make you feel good, and that's what's hard is if you hadn't done it before, this is the year where you're going to be like, well, I ain't doing it this year because I don't even want to know. The checkbook shows I'm good, so I'm good. Well, this would be the year to do that where you can kind of just make sure you know that you're cutting the right amount of cost without cutting too much yield and cutting profits. All right, so you guys ready for the number one?
Ready.
Ready.
All right. So then... The number one tool, which came up in one of the meetings we had yesterday, number one tool to use for next year is crop rotation.
What?
You're going to go.
You should rotate. Can't just do corn
and
corn.
And you go like, well, how is rotating really going to help? Like, I need to plant corn here. I need this here. But the rotating away from corn and corn always helps. I mean, you're cheaper on... The more corn you have, the more costly the seed, the more costly the potential for disease, kind of all that builds up.
Well, and increased yields, right?
Right.
You should get a better yield, too. Right. So not only are we potentially costing us less, but we're hopefully getting more.
More on the back end.
Yeah. More on the back end.
Yeah, what did Kevin Jerick say about rotating? It was in a conversation, but it was like, just rotate, stupid. Sometimes there is times where... that's hard because this isn't necessarily a quick fix. That's one part that maybe made it that was a little bit of a hard part from number one. But in general, corn you got a lot of input costs, and there's just a huge amount of money that you have to set aside. And granted, you're, you know, you get a lot of, you kind of have your most profit potential, but you have the most out there. And the more we can fit, you know, other crops into that rotation, the better.
Right. And it's more than likely you're not going to be able to flip every acre.
No.
But, you know, instead of going corn on corn for the fifth year in a row, you know, having a couple of second-year corn fields and rotating those longer-term corn fields that you might have is be a better option than trying to juggle the whole thing.
Maybe. I was trying to run budgets on alfalfa. So let's be stick to a dairy guy. So say your corn alfalfa. Are you better off pulling out some third-year hay fields early to seed back down? It was hard. It sort of depended on a lot of things. One was if the yield of the third-year hay field, but if it isn't good, you're for surely better off.
Well, and Understander did a thing way back when. Half a ton is all it takes for you to rotate that field out. If you lose a half a ton, it's profitability-wise, take it out, put it into corn, even though, yep, you got to seed something else down, and that's high cost. But losing that half a ton was enough to pull that field out. And let's remember, guys, what was June? We were rutting the hell out of fields.
Right.
So we're going to have fields we got to pull out that maybe we want to hang on to just because they're not that old, but they're trashed.
Right.
And this winter could be the year winter kill comes back and bites you, too.
You're right.
We don't know. So the combination of having two rough years on hay fields, last year we got yields on fields that weren't getting water, and now this year we rutted them up or, you know, hit them a little bit harder, that maybe this winter will be the winter that brings back some of that. You never know.
We are dry, right? We're going into a dry, so that's better than going into a wet. But at the same point, we wrecked those crowns in June. So even though it's dry, we still wrecked them in June.
And we got a couple months left of this year yet, too, if things could change.
Right.
So and then on the, say, crop enterprise side, so if you're a corn bean guy, and maybe there's enough guys that are kind of like 2 year corn, 1 year bean, maybe you reduce that a little bit. That is hard. Like some of those guys, they've kind of got it all set up for that way. But then there's a lot of research out there that kind of adding a third crop to a two crop rotation makes you more profitable. So not only, and it's hard because again, this is a multi-year thing, and it's one of the things they add is winter wheat. Well, we're too late to do that for next year. So that one might be a little tricky, but adding a third crop kind of in that was, so this is a Agronomy Journal research, and it says corn and soybean yields and returns are greater in rotations with wheat. So specifically with wheat, it's a 2021 study.
It's a good date, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it's your birthday. Yeah, January 19th, 2021. And it was a study done by Matt. Do you want to get their last names here? I'm going to butcher them.
Janacek, Hooker, Weersink, Vin, and Dean is what it looks like.
Sounds like a law firm.
Yes. Law offices.
The law offices. So, and kind of one of their conclusions was the inclusion of wheat in a corn soybean rotation once every 4 or 5 years may provide optimal balance between accruing higher net returns from corn and soybeans while minimizing direct net revenue reductions associated with wheat. So kind of that balance, I mean, just a little balance to it. That's what I was thinking, though, of what other crop could you include next? You know, we're already a little late for winter wheat. You go spring wheat in our, you know, in some areas it might work well.
Yeah.
But maybe you team up with a close by dairy farm.
Yeah, just going to say that, Todd.
That's a hard on a first year profitability wise. Right. It's probably not a good plan. But just be thinking about it. I mean, that one again is a little harder and it's maybe not as big of a quick fix, but just get working with your rotation to kind of make that better is always good.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. There's our top six thoughts to consider when looking at your crop budget for next year, and might be a quick fix to help that budget look a little bit better. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So EPA has approved the next generation of glufosinate-based herbicide for use in multiple crops. Liberty Ultra, powered by GluL technology, has received U.S. environmental registration and is now approved for use, subject to state approval. Liberty Ultra herbicide contains the active ingredient glufosinate p-ammonium, also referred to as L-glufosinate ammonium, and is the next generation of Liberty herbicide from BASF. This new post-knockdown solution is effective on both broadleaves and grasses and available for use on glufosinate-enabled corn, soybean, cotton, and canola acres. We were talking rotations, so just corn, soybean, wheat. Just
rolled out of your tongue.
Yeah, so soybean, cotton, corn, and canola acres. There is no Liberty Link wheat. In research trials, Liberty Ultra herbicide has demonstrated 20% superior weed control and won 9 out of 10 head-to-head comparisons against generics, according to BASF. As farmers increasingly rely on glufosinate in their weed management programs, the demand for enhanced efficacy and efficiency in this herbicide is more apparent than ever, according to Matt Malone, product manager for BASF Agricultural Solutions. Combination will give farmers better weed control on grasses and broadleaves, like especially tough broadleaf plants like Palmer amaranth, water hemp, giant ragweed, kochia, and may result in more bushels at the end of the season. The GluL technology, the patented synthesis process that refines the glufosinate ammonium active ingredient, is the most herbicidally active component and allows every gallon of Liberty Ultra to cover 33% more acres than generics, so a third more use out of that jug. So
this was always the easiest one to remember the rate. It was just
32. Oh, yeah, it was you're right.
You don't screw with it.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, like 32 ounces.
Like, because Roundup has changed.
Yeah, like so many different like active pounds per gallon, and this has always been... What's my rate on Liberty? 32. Don't even... It's like set it and forget it. You don't even change.
I feel like going to 24 is an easy
amount.
You know, 32. Because now, too, depending on your Roundup, you're probably at 24.
Right.
Because it used to be like cord and a cord if you're spraying them together. So maybe you can be 24 and 24. But I like the 9 out of 10 dentists recommend this.
9 out of 10 water hemp. Died faced with Liberty Ultra.
It's probably not good enough.
No, probably not. All right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute, which is just a GDU update this week. We're dealing with the end, quote unquote, of the growing season.
Are we the end? I couldn't decide if it was like... We had that frost. Wasn't it the killing frost?
It's the end. My grass hasn't grown in a long time.
So you're not going to gain much at this point.
Right. Like, it felt to me like a right time to do it. We've talked about these GDU updates this year really hard because you need like a bunch of different starting dates. It doesn't really work.
The small grains are still kind of cooking a little bit. Yeah. I mean, they're still kind of moving.
Still going,
But for the most part, corn, beans, it's the end.
At this rate, it'll be growing into January. So, I mean... That's just kind of what we saw last year, too, when it was stayed warmer. We didn't get the frosts. But it's funny you bring up the grass because my son looked outside this morning. He's like, yeah, probably won't have to mow the grass anymore. It's all frosted over. Like, well, you never know. Like, no, it's all, look at it. It's done. Like,
I think we're going to hit it one more time. One more at least.
When we did actually get that little bit of rain, it kind of grew some. So there may not yet be done.
Sounds like an old man.
Yeah.
That's great.
Is he an old soul, man?
A little bit sometimes.
Takes after his dad.
But yeah, so here in Seymour to date, we've had 2,721 GDUs. Normal is 2,577. And so that's an increase of 144. Our forecast for the next 2 weeks, we're only going to gain not even 100 GDUs.
Which is more than normal for us.
Right, it's still more than normal, but not a...
And one other disclaimer, all these are from May 1st.
Yeah, since May 1st,
so
true.
So depending on when you planted corn that you maybe still have out there or whatever, this is quite different. In general, though, as you do, we still are. The main part to note here is the versus normal is as I move those dates, we still were always ahead of normal. So we did get a...
And north of us and south of us are even more.
But really, most of those gains were September
right
into October. Like, we were behind probably in August.
I wouldn't say behind even. We were, like, normal. But still, you're right, man.
Yeah.
Is there was some part... I mean, September, there was a lot of corn that I was... I wasn't sure would make it. And ran GDUs and made me feel a little bit like, nope, if we stay on this path of kind of ahead of normal, we'll make it. And, I was pleasantly surprised in some corn that we were chopping like 3 weeks ago and now is black layered. So, I mean, it's just crazy.
I tested a 81-day planted June 20th.
That would...
In 25%
moisture. Yeah, I believe it. Which... Smart grain. Of them to go down to 81 day.
Yeah. Grain moisture, 25%. I was like, those were the fields, Todd. I was in the same boat 2 months ago going, maybe we should chop these. Yeah. Like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And they're like, no, we're gonna stick with it.
Right.
And it was the right decision.
All right. As alluded to in Crivets to the north, since May 1st, they're at 2,627. So almost the same as us, within 100. Their normal is 2,272, so they are 355 GDUs ahead of normal. And they're forecast to gain only about 70 GDUs in the next 2 weeks. And then when we head south to Sun Prairie, they are at 3,039. Their normal is 2,694, so they are 345 degrees ahead of normal, and their forecast, they're looking to gain just 100. Under 100 the next 2 weeks here. So, we're not making big strides at this point, but we are still warmer than normal. We haven't had that, at least in this area. Up north, I think they get frosted a little bit harder than we did so far. But, we haven't had those really cold nights yet to really kind of end the season, but...
When I tried going throughout the state to find other areas that were, like Crivets, Wisconsin, being 355 was about the highest above normal that I could find.
Sure.
So it was pretty weak. And even for Sun Prairie to hit over 3,000 is significant and different. So. Yeah.
No, and really up north, that's kind of been a trend the last couple of years, is they've been kind of warmer than normal, it seems, throughout the summer and stuff, so.
And GDUs, too, if you think about top out at 86, this is the other one tricky part with this is, like, we're not... If you have a whole bunch of days in the 90s, it doesn't necessarily gain you a lot. It's a whole bunch of days in kind of the mid-80s is where you obviously are in lower nightly temperatures, you know, because it bottoms out at 50, but then if you have a 60 or 70 overnight, you gain quite a bit of GDUs, too. So... Anyway, yeah, I was just looking at it. I mean, there was a couple of days in September that were, to max out GDUs a couple of days in a row were pretty neat.
Just a little fun, Todd. I popped in Cedar Rapids, Iowa for May 1st, and they're at 3,500.
Yeah.
So they're only 500 more than Sun Prairie. Like, that's pretty cool. And they're almost 360 ahead of normal, too. So they're ahead of normal as well.
Right.
But... If you think of corn, you think of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, you know, We're not that far from them.
All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you, Bill. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. All they need to do, it's real easy, is just search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or in an Android phone. Please search an app like Podcast Addict, and there you can also search Tilth Talk Radio to find us. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll move into our cool beans. That's corny and some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week, 65% of U.S. corn and 81% of soybeans have been harvested thus far. USDA is reporting another solid week of corn and soybean harvest. That followed another generally dry week in much of the Midwest and the Plains. So as of Sunday, the U.S. is at 65% compared to the five-year average of 52%, with 98% of the crop mature. 81% of U.S. soybeans have been harvested compared to 67% on average. And that's, I think, been attributed to the not only warmer but clear weather that we've had. You know, not many cloudy days. We've had sun. I can't remember a fall when you've had so many days that you could harvest beans where you didn't,
right.
didn't have to sit there and go, well, I guess I'm going to switch to corn because I can't do my beans.
Well, and beans got too dry. On most and corn is getting too dry on guys, too. So it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, I talked to a farm the other day and said, yeah, normally we can get like 10,000 or 8,000 to 10,000 bushel a day through the dryer, but with the moistures they're getting, they can push 12,000 through, no problem.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah,
right.
That's fair.
So so if the dryer isn't holding you up this year like it maybe would other years. Most dry weather in the Midwest and Plains is having an impact on winter wheat planting, with 70% or 73% of that crop sown and 46% emerged, which is both behind normal, but also the dry isn't helping that much either. But yeah, I mean, at this rate, Halloween may be the end for a lot of guys when it comes to getting harvest done here. So
and both corn and beans were like 13.5% above, so above normal in harvest. So that's too or the it wasn't normal. It was on the 5-year average.
I'm sure there'll still be somebody harvesting some corn in January, but this year you maybe don't have to. Even December,
And I don't think you want to. You know,
right. Nobody wants to.
Well, no, you never want to. I'm just saying, even with stock integrity and stuff, like this would be your go get her.
All right, that's corny this week. 2024 could go down as the worst financial year for farmers since 2007. Yay!
Boo! 2024.
So as agriculture faces multiple challenges, the USDA's latest net farm income forecast is masking the reality for farmers. Livestock margins have improved this year. High input costs and below break-even prices for row crops mean margins could be the worst in 20 years. So when polled, the Ag Economist Monthly Monitor, when asked if the U.S. ag economy was on the brink of a recession, 75% of respondents said yes, 25% no. In a recession, 54% said yes, and 46% said no. So farmers are seeing heightened volatility in the commodity markets as harvest progresses. Latest Ag Economist Monthly, like I said, had that little poll there that people are feeling the impact of those prices. So margins that farmers are facing on average are really a tough place to be in for 2022 to 2024, according to Krista Swanson, the lead economist for the National Corn Growers Association. According to USDA, the cost to produce corn dropped 5%, but the price was down 37%. When we look at those numbers, average numbers from USDA, looking at cost of production for corn prices and yield, that comes out to an average loss of $125 per acre. USDA's revised net farm income projections were released in early September, and the updated figures were surprising to many economists. The new numbers show net cash farm income for the 2024 calendar year will fall $12 billion, which is down about 7% from 2023, and net farm income will fall $6.5 billion, or 4.4%. This is compared to projections released in February of this year, which suggested net farm income would only fall 26%. Or would fall 26%, sorry. So, yeah, it's hard out there for a pimp.
Yeah. There's always those, like, renters or maybe a friend from, like, out of ag that lives in the city that, like, doesn't have the clue of when prices are low. And I was talking with a farm and, the landlord was talking.
I would say, landlords like, tend to be oblivious to that. I mean,
just and not read the room and not go like, you know, or, and he said something
get an extra
like,
$50 an acre.
Right, kind of like, oh, you know, hey, you have another good year. You guys, you know, this is great and all that. And I'm thinking like, man, you don't have a clue. And yeah, it's just always hard out there because it just seems like when times are good, you know, everybody wants to be a farmer and is like, this is great. And then when times are bad, they don't even realize how tough it is. So
what always gets me is you get people who are disconnected, and they're like, oh, there's a lot of money in farming. Like, yeah, but it moves through. It goes both ways.
Right.
Like,
in and out.
It comes right in, but it goes right back out. Because animals got to eat. Tractors got to have fuel and maintenance. Like, there's... In the good years, they update stuff because they haven't updated it, and maybe, you know...
Right.
More recently, I guess we're probably closer to $7 corn than... You know, because I can remember that within the last, it hasn't even been 20 years, I guess, yet. But yeah, that's probably the last major, like, huge turnover of equipment and stuff we had on farms. So
one of the quotes I did like from an economist in the article just said, financial health is weaker but still pretty strong. So that is, like, you know, you might lose the battle of 2024, but you're still winning the
win
war.
Yeah.
You know, the hopefully... As a, you know, as a whole, financially, you've been able to put yourself in a good position. But these are always just times you gotta. And farmers are great; they get hit with weather problems like we had this spring. But and then,
yep.
You know, the markets can be difficult. So,
well, we had 2 years of just wacky weather.
Yeah,
and, I mean, last year we made out better than we all expected, and this year turned into probably not quite as good as expected. So. All right, wrap things up then with our Field Good Friday. Are you a photographer? Do you like to take pictures, particularly of maybe corn or farm, at least farm-related images? If so, the Fields of Corn Photo Contest might be for you. It's put on by the National Corn Growers Association. It's open currently until November 15th, 2024. And I love how they do this with contests, 11:59:59 p.m. Central Standard Time on November 15th. So midnight, you're too late. But
if you remember at 11:59 and 30 seconds, you have a few seconds to go.
And hopefully it's on your phone, easily accessible. So you can also vote for images that are there. There's a number of them. Todd, Bill, and I were kind of scrolling through.
There's a lot of them there.
Yeah. What was submitted so far, and voting will close on November 30th, 2024, also at 11:59:59 p.m. That one's a little easier to manage if you remember at 11:59:30. You can still get your vote out there. But yeah, number of different pictures out there. There's some, most of them corn. There are a few soybean pictures in there as well. Irrigation, kids on the farm, harvest pictures, growing season pictures. Any type of picture you can imagine, kind of, you can throw out there. The prizes are a grand prize of $500, so two winners will be selected, one from the seven categories, and the most popular from those categories. Most votes received will also receive $500. And that photo that receives the most votes across all eight categories will win that $500. So I wonder if, can you get $1,000 then? Like, if you win one of the categories and you have the most votes? I have not fully read the rules to see if that's possible. First place winner for each category will receive $300, second place $200, and third place will receive $100. So chance to maybe get a little cash there as well. So you can vote for your favorites, and once the voting closes, I'm sure they'll have a little bit of time there to tally everything up, but they'll announce the winners once it's done. So scroll through those photos. Maybe find one that you think would fit a category and submit it. Did you see that? What are all the categories? Did you find that, Todd?
Yep, there is. Here, I'll bring it down. So all categories. Scenery, landscapes, the farm family lifestyle, growing field corn, conservation, corn, livestock, bird's eye view, and red, white, and blue.
Okay.
So kind of patriotic family. Sure. There's growing field corn, so that's more of like, you know, growing.
Early season.
Yeah, and then the just corn, and corn is like more of the grain, like closer up pictures of.
It's corn.
Yeah. I do like that my favorite of all of these is like the caption or the explanation people, it looks like you can give like a couple word caption to them, and some of them are kind of fun. So, yeah, just like blondes have more fun, and then it's some silks, like some unpollinated silks.
Sure.
It just so yep. Yeah, I just think those are some are kind of clever. Boys of Fall, and it's got like three kids tooling around in a
they're kind of like picture titles more than
right. Yes.
And some of them get a little bit long. I know there was a couple that we were looking at that were a little bit long-winded or I guess mildly educational, because there was one about nitrogen and how corn takes up the nitrogen and alfalfa puts it back. That was like a really long one. It was like, oh, okay. But yeah, opportunities there. So thanks for being here today, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
Today we talked about top six quick fixes for your 2025 budget that you can do right now and hopefully cut costs, not profits. And that was VRT, conventional corn possibilities, less tillage or prescribed tillage, liming, having a crop cost of production budget, and rotating those crops. In our spotlight, we looked at the next generation of Liberty herbicide being approved nationally. Now we just have to wait for state-by-state approval. Ag History Minute, we went through the current GDUs, and that was here, Crivets, and Sun Prairie. Cool Beans this week, 81% of soybeans and 65% of U.S. corn has been harvested so far this season. Our That's Corny was 2024 could be the worst financial year since 2007. And our Field Good Friday was the National Corn Growers Fields of Corn Photo Contest. So thanks for listening. As always, happy farming.